Hello and welcome to this week's Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. And I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at PureRockFury. The movie we chose for this week, or I chose, I should say, was Big Eyes, directed by Tim Burton, written by Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski. Totally nailed that pronunciation. This movie stars Amy Adams, Christoph Waltz, Danny Houston. Not sure who Danny Houston was, but...
He was General Stryker in the Wolverine movie. He was the journalist or whatever.
Okay. I can see that. Kristen Stewart. Being him. Yeah, well, Kristen Stewart was in it for, a total of, 8 minutes and...
That long?
I don't know if I'd say she's a star of it, but, it basically revolves around Amy Adams and Christoph Waltz, but...
It came out pre-Jessica Jones. If it came out now, she'd probably have a bigger part.
I think it came out after, though, that B in Apartment 23 whatever the hell, and that show, for some reason, was huge.
No, it wasn't.
I thought it was.
It lasted 13 episodes, which is bad for network TV.
I thought it lasted a few seasons. I must be thinking of Two Broke Girls. That one lasted for some reason.
That one's never going away.
Well, anywho, back to the movie. A drama about the awakening of the painter Margaret Keane, her phenomenal success in the 1950s, and the subsequent legal difficulties she had with her husband, who claimed credit for her works in the 1960s.
Lisa Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
This has actually been on my radar since it came out, and I just got around to seeing it because I, obviously can't watch everything, but I'm always been a big fan of Christoph Waltz and Amy Adams, so putting them together in a movie, what's not to like? And it's about art, again, what's not to like? The movie opens up with Margaret Keane leaving her first husband. I forget his name at this point. It doesn't matter. He's not really in the movie at all. But it starts out with her and packing up her and her daughter and leaving for, I believe, New York City.
San Francisco.
There you go. I knew it was one of the coasts. And she's trying to, make ends meet. So she starts taking her artwork down to the park to try and sell. And, she does sketches for... I think it was $2 or whatever, and a lot of people were, ripping her down to a dollar for, a sketch.
Ripping her down?
Well, I mean, what else you want to say?
It's fine. Ripping her down is good.
I know what you were thinking.
I wasn't thinking anything. Talking her down.
There you go.
Negotiating a lower rate.
And she happens to be, her booth is set up right next to Walter Keane, who is played by Christoph Waltz, and he's selling his paintings for, $35-$40 a pop. And he comes over and, starts talking to her and, you're grossly undercharging for your work. This is amazing. Gives her the whole song and dance. They end up dating more or less and they quickly get married. I think it was not a lot of time in there, but...
She gets a letter from her first husband saying she's an unfit mother and... He's trying to get the courts involved to take her daughter away because she doesn't have a proper family environment. So as a kind of shotgun solution, Walter Keane goes, well, marry me. Then she has a home and a family, and then you don't have to worry about it. So they run to Hawaii and get married.
That's right. And, he, on top of being a painter himself, he was also... very successful real estate agent of sorts. So, he had a lot of money. He had the means to take care of a family. So they pushed forward with that. And then he tried to get a joint showing around local clubs for his artwork and also her artwork. And it was a complete disaster. I mean, trying to get into different galleries and different clubs, and they finally get into one, and, they're stationed by the bathroom, so it's it's pretty depressing when you think about it, but eventually her artwork starts to catch on. She's got this style, it's more, it it's been termed big eyes. Basically, she just, you know, she paints children, but the eyes are extremely disproportioned to the face, more or less.
It's almost like the precursor to anime.
Yeah, more or less. And they quickly start selling quicker than his work, so, you know. But, of course, her being a woman in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s, more or less, he starts to take credit because, as a woman, she's not, you know, respected or not taken seriously in the art world. And
well, that's what he tells her, because she goes, well, what about Georgia O'Keeffe? And he goes, yeah, anyway, so I'll just put my name on these and right. We'll just sell them, and that's how we'll do it.
Yeah, so he begins to take credit for her work, and the popularity of her work skyrockets. I mean, to the point where he basically turns it into, you know, he's basically printing his own money at this point by taking credit and, you know, doing prints, and, you know, she's locked in a room basically cranking out pictures for 40, 50 hours a week, you know, paintings or whatever, and meanwhile, he's just making a killing, and she's... And I guess we'll just lead this right into what we liked about it. And this is, like, Amy Adams, throughout the whole movie, like, you could see, like, her frustrations building and building the entire time until, you know, later on towards the end where she finally snaps. But it's, she's such a good actress. It's a, and, you know, like I said, when you pair her off with Christoph Waltz, who's another just amazing actor. Like, it's the whole time he's playing this nice guy and he's trying to do the right thing. And then you just, as the movie progresses, you realize how much of a scumbag he is. And, I don't know. You got anything to.
Yeah, again, I think at this point, it's safe to say that Amy Adams might be the best actress alive. It's if she's not, she's definitely near the top. She's very, very close to being the best actress alive, in my opinion. And this movie, she really flexes those muscles in terms of showing how good she is.
I agree.
I admit, I've taken art history a few times, and this art movement, if you can call it that, completely flew under my radar. I wasn't particularly familiar with it. Even in the trailers, I'm like, there was a Big Eyes movement in the late 50s. I'm like, I'm aware of like Cubism and Surrealism and Pointillism and the Renaissance, and I don't recall pop art, you know, the Andy Warhol movement. I don't ever recall hearing of, and you know, it might have been something that we touched on and just glossed over, because I think this, if you can call it an art movement, was a blip in time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it could be considered a movement. It was just her paintings. You know, it's not like, I mean, I know after a while and after, you know, it was shown that it was super profitable, I know advertising companies did start to tack on to the style, but for the most part, she was the only artist doing it, and it didn't last very long before she just said, you know what, screw this, I'm out of here, and then, you know, divorced him. And
yeah, and she had other abilities artistically. I mean, you started to see towards the back half of the movie, she was kind of dabbling in surrealism and, you know, different sorts of art styles herself, but because the Big Eyes phenomenon was so profitable, I mean, let's be fair, she was living a fairly lavish lifestyle. She just wasn't enjoying it.
Right.
It was her husband who was partying with the Beach Boys and going to these big gallery openings. And at the same time, he's also dealing with the fact that art critics around the world are bashing her work, like, horribly, calling it kitsch, saying it's too literal, saying it's junk, saying it's for children. I mean, that this is not art. This is pop. This is a pop phenomenon that will go away as fast as whatever. Bubblegums. The pogo stick. The hula hoop. This is junk. This is a fad. This is never going to last. And he's taking the emotional weight of it, which is weird because he didn't do the work. So when, like, art critic, like, for example, the art critic played by Terrence Stamp, the guy from the New York Times, is essentially saying this is the exact antithesis of art. This is garbage. He's the one getting super flustered and upset because in his eyes, he's the ambassador for this new art movement that's caught the public's eye. And the interesting thing is when they're at the gallery opening and he's got all these big eyes paintings on the wall, the gallery's filled with people. But nobody's buying because in his mind, this is a new art movement and these paintings should be selling for thousands apiece. And instead, most of the people in the gallery are just your average everyday Americans who are like, oh, I love this art style. And then that's where he comes up with the idea of coming up with prints. Like, why try and sell a $3,500 painting to somebody who makes $50 a week? I could sell them a print for 50 cents, sell millions of them.
Right. Well, they had a stack of posters on the shelf, and people were just coming in, taking the free posters and leaving. And when he saw that, that's when, yeah, he decided, let's start selling these.
It's almost like, in a weird way, he almost kind of started the, if you can't really call it a movement, but he started the department store art movement of going to Target and buying framed prints of Spider-Man, motel art, that kind of thing. Like, you know, still lifes, that sort of thing.
Well, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm being, you know, jaded here or anything, if even that's the right expression, but... You know, it just seems like a lot of people who really enjoy art are the people who can't afford to spend that kind of money, and the people who do spend that money just are like, ooh, he's the hot name, here's 50 grand, and then 2 years later, well, now I can sell it for 400 grand. Look at me making a profit. Like, it just, I'm not saying that's how it all is, but it just, I just feel like the people who actually can appreciate art for what it is can't afford to buy original pieces. And it's super annoying because I'm one of those people.
It kind of speaks to what we talked about yesterday in terms of television, and I'll shift to that in a moment. But it feels like when you're engulfed in any one thing, you become very like, bleh. Like you roll your eyes at 70 to 80% of it because you've been there, you've seen it, you've done it all. And to you, even if you don't actually create things, the fact that you've seen things that most other people only read about or hear about on TV is like, blech, I've already seen this movement, so 1957 and it's 1958. I'm bored. Move on. Let's do something better. Like we were talking about yesterday, for years, there was three channels and a handful of television shows, and it was easy to go, man, there's nothing on. But now, we have Netflix, we have Hulu, we have Amazon, we have 5,000 cable stations, we have movies, we have DVDs and thumbsticks that...
Web series.
There's a million things to watch. And still, people complain that there's too much of this. There's too many shows like this. There's too many comic book movies. There's too many romantic comedies. And it's like... Everybody's being indulged to the point of overload, and everybody's complaining constantly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what I got from this movie. Like, as far as like the Art Nouveau elitists, to them, big eyes, that style was appreciated too much by the masses, therefore it couldn't possibly be art because, you know, the riffraff enjoys it, so... You know, they discovered it at the same time I did. It's like anything. Punk rock bands are great until everyone finds out about them. Then all of a sudden, well, they suck now.
Yeah.
They could sound
sold out.
They could sound exactly the same as their first record. But the fact that now your neighbor is listening to them on their headset while they're power walking their little dog, now they suck. Same thing. And because at the time, there was no internet, there was no... cable TV, the in crowd were able to discover art movements first. I'm way off topic here now. We're not even talking about the movie anymore. But they
it's
were able,
typical.
True. But they were able to discover new art movements first. It wasn't like Picasso was like walking down Main Street, like flicking Prince of Guernica to everybody, going, hey, check out my stuff. Boom. or Salvador Dali, you know, he wasn't, you know, walking around selling prints door to door. So the art world got to him first. Whereas in this particular instance, you know, they were your neighbors creating art, and everybody got exposed to it at the same time. So I've officially derailed.
Pretty much.
Let's kind of get back to that movie. He was taking the brunt of the criticism, and slowly but surely, as he started to mentally unravel, that's when it kind of got out that, oh, guess what? Not only did he not paint these paintings, he doesn't paint or draw or do anything. And then she started kind of reeling back to their various, like, signpost moments of when they met in the park, their first date, blah, 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 blah. And she starts going, man, I've never seen you draw anything. Have you ever, did you actually go? Because then towards the end of the movie, she finds something in the house that kind of is like the big red flag that goes, oh my God, his entire life story is probably bullshit. Who did I marry? And that's when, like, the whole facade falls apart. Even though she spends years doing the work and living this life of, like, what have I gotten myself into? How do I get out of this? Like, this guy is, you know, I'm pouring my heart and soul into these paintings, and he's just going out there going, me, I did it. I'm the best. Yeah. Stay in the house.
Yeah.
Stay upstairs. Don't look behind the curtain.
Yeah, and, you know, like we said, towards the end, when she finally left him, she went to Hawaii, and she, you know, got some friends, and they had some kind of religious group, I think.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes, that's what, and then I forget exactly why they were, you know, doing some kind of a radio interview, but the guy was like, oh, so, you know, you're the wife of, you know, Walter Keane, the famous blah, blah, blah. She's like, no, well, actually, we're separated, and, oh, yeah, by the way, I painted everything. And that's where everything snowballed down, and then they went to court. And that's a whole other thing I'll probably get into in a minute. Actually, you know what? Screw it. We're on the whole web. What did you like? The whole court procedure
was hilarious.
It was, because, you know, he was being sued, but as well as him, it was also the galleries, I think, or the publishing house or whatever that was taking care of all the work. They were both being sued. Once the publishing company or whatever cleared their name, they got up and left, and he's like, well, wait, what? He's like, no, you are still being sued for slander or whatever. So then now he's got no lawyer, and he's like, well, I'll just defend myself, blah, blah, blah. And it was just crazy antics. And then it basically boiled down to the judge going, look, it's your word against hers. The only way we're going to settle this is if you guys paint here in the courtroom and, you know, winner take all kind of thing. And, you know, it sounds kind of silly, you know, and like I said, this is the 1960s. It's like, man, did any of this really happen? And then I went online and I was reading, I forget the name of the site, but it, you know, basically breaks down the Hollywood movies versus what actually happened. And most of what they put in this movie actually happened. He did try to defend himself very comedically in the courtroom. They did have a paint-off where he basically sat there for an hour and didn't even put pen to paper. You know, he complained about an old shoulder injury, whatever, you know, and you read on, and even until the day he died, he swore up and down he would not let it go, that he created all that and he got screwed out of everything. It's just kind of amazing that he never painted again after the court case, but he swore up and down that I did everything, I've been screwed, and my legacy has been shrouded, or whatever, you know. So that's just interesting facts about the movie being actually very accurate. Moving on to what we didn't like, personally, and, you know, it didn't ruin anything for me. It's not like, you know, it's going to kill the movie for anybody, but it did seem, and I understand you have a limited time frame, but it did seem to progress quickly. Feels like there was a lot of stuff that I'm sure was missed. But I just feel like, you know, one minute they're here, you know, next minute they're in a mansion, next minute she's leaving them. It felt very much like it kept jumping months into the future. Which, I mean, like I said, I understand you're limited to, you know, potentially a 2-hour time frame. But, you know, it's just some of that was just a little like, man, that I'm sure a lot happened in between that I did not get.
Could be.
Get the story of, I guess, you know. But like I said, doesn't kill anything. It's just one thing that it kept popping into my mind as we're watching the movies, that a lot of time is passing every 20-30 minutes. You know, it would make a big jump like that.
I think for me, what I don't know if it. See, I'm kind of down on Tim Burton these days. Like, the movies he's been making the last 10, 15 years have been mostly kids' movies and kind of disappointing retreads. And, like, the quirkiness of his early movies seems to kind of have faded into the background. This movie has practically none of that. It starts out almost like a classic Tim Burton movie. Like, she's in this suburban home in the valley or wherever in California, and everything is like bright and sunny to the point of almost being cartoony, which I was thinking, if this is the direction he's taking, this could be really interesting, because this story, just the synopsis, is almost too ridiculous to believe. So if he does it in this very bright, colorful way, even though the story kind of already hinting towards like a darker, more serious story, like he did with Ed Wood. I don't know if you saw Ed Wood.
No.
The whole movie's black and white.
Right.
Which, and it's quirky and it's weird. It's a true story, though, but it's filmed almost like a live cartoon, and it works beautifully. And I was thinking, man, if he does it with this movie, that could be great. But it takes all of 10 minutes to just become a movie. I mean, it's an interesting story, and like I said, Amy Adams is just phenomenal, and Christoph Waltz is also pretty amazing. But that's like, at this point, it's like, oh, Christoph Waltz is breathing. You're like, oh, okay. Like, you don't have to sell me on Christoph Waltz at this point. And right. At this point, you don't have to sell me on Amy Adams could do a Clorox Bleach movie where she literally just washes clothes for 2 hours. I'm like, I bet you that's good. But, like, it just, it like, when it was over, I'm like, I have yet, up until this point, to see a Tim Burton movie that didn't at least have twinges of his style. This did not feel like a Tim Burton movie at all. Content-wise, it did, because it's the quirky, weird story that he kind of goes for when he's not doing a movie about a hot dog with a dog's head that, you know, was made in a laboratory or whatever weird animated movie he's doing these days.
I don't know. I like his weird stuff. But
no, I love his weird stuff. That's what I'm saying. This movie, content-wise, is pretty, it's pretty weird. But he shoots it in this very straightforward way where you're like, unless someone tells you it's a Tim Burton movie, you pretty much would never know.
I can agree with this.
It didn't, like, make the movie bad. It just, like, I was just like, I don't even know if, does Tim Burton even have a style anymore? It almost doesn't feel like it. Maybe it's just this movie, though. I don't know.
All right, so if you were making this film, what would you do differently?
Make it more wacky, like Tim Burton used to make.
Ed Wood
proves that he can tell a true story and still have it look like a Tim Burton movie. Tim Burton movies used to have a definable style, and I feel like this didn't at all.
I don't know. I like the way it was done. Like I said, the only thing that I might, and it's again without knowing more details that are not in the movie, you know, I can't say definitively that I would include some more of that, you know, for all I know, it could have just been filler that didn't need to be told, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would change much without knowing the full story, you know, like what to add, what to take out. I mean, it was really well done. I mean, I had high hopes and they were met. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, I'm not trying to say it's a perfect movie, but for what it is, it's fantastic.
I felt it was a tad slow here and there, but like nothing to the point where I was like, God, will you get on with it? It was like every so often, like this scene here or that scene there was a little too long for no reason. And I was just like, do we need to spend 5 minutes with this when it could easily be done in two? I don't know.
Right.
But it was just little occasional nagging drag issues more than anything. It wasn't like I was ever bored. The story itself is so bizarre that it was kind of like, yeah, you'd be hard pressed to make this a boring film when it's just such a weird story.
Yeah. So if you were taking the work on face value alone, what are your thoughts on the Big Eyes art movement?
I think looking at it now, I get in some ways, and in some ways I understand due to the whole ground up presentation, why it wasn't loved by the art scene so much at the time. But I kind of feel like if anime wasn't a thing, if that style of character wasn't a thing back then in Japanese comics and art, I definitely feel like this was a pretty strong new technique in character art. So you have to at least acknowledge that it was a good mix of realism and almost like an animation style of artwork.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really, personally, I guess I shouldn't say everybody, but I really kind of thought it was interesting. Like you said, I don't know if it, you know, could be really considered the precursor to anime or not. Like, I'm not exactly sure when anime became a thing, but I don't know. Like, I mean, it wasn't just the fact that, you know, it was the eyes. I mean, there was obviously, you know, different backgrounds, you know, that helped, I guess, tell a story of that child in the painting. I mean, it's very interesting, and I thoroughly enjoyed it and wish I had known more about it, but, I mean, obviously now that I do. But at the same time, like, you know, because it was such the fad and the advertising, it's also the same thing you could expect to go see on, like, a Hallmark card, so it's kind of annoying in that aspect, but...
Right.
I mean, I definitely dig it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a lot of portraits and such, paintings of figures, they're meant to emote certain feelings and so on. I feel like this one draws all that to the eyes because the eyes are so obviously the focal point.
Yeah.
But I see why it was bashed at the time. Not that I necessarily agree with it, but looking back, I definitely find it to be relevant. And I mean, again, art is always subjective. I mean, what one person thinks is junk is, you know, I think the reason why people hated it at the time is because it was pretty literal. Like, there was no interpretation to be found, but also because it didn't challenge the status quo and it didn't make you think. It was pretty like, here it is, and there you have it.
Yeah.
Like, there, I've definitely seen, I think art critics tend to want to feel like they have to draw out their own interpretations of a piece of art, because if they're not creative enough to do art, they need to feel like a part of the process. And when art is as it is, and they're not given the opportunity to go, well, let me think, then it's like, well, I haven't been able to work here, so therefore I don't like this because I don't feel like I'm... I get it, but I don't get it at the same time. There's enough to go around for everybody. There you go. Maybe I'm just not high society enough.
It is what it is. Put one foot in front of the other, you know. Done and done.
I kind of look at it this way. Like,
right down the middle. I like that.
I can enjoy Captain America the Winter Soldier just as much as I can enjoy, you know, a Kurosawa movie or a more artsy indie film. I can enjoy them both in different ways and at different times of the day for different reasons. Same thing here. I can enjoy a Salvador Dali or a Hieronymus Bosch as much as I can enjoy Margaret Keane.
I don't know. Like for instance, you know, a quick little Google search of her artwork. I mean, and you got like a boy dressed in like a clown outfit, but he's holding the clown face, the clown mask, when he's actually crying. Like, I feel like there's more to it than it's just, it is what it is, you know?
I'm just talking more about, like, the mass-produced stuff she did when she was essentially trapped in her husband's attic, which you can actually kind of interpret to mean, like, she was drawing all these sad children because she was herself, like, sad and feeling punished based on the fact she was stuck in the attic making art while he's out making the rounds all day long.
Yeah.
She was pouring her own sadness into those. She probably was literally like going, I feel like a 5-year-old again. And she was pouring all her own sadness into these small children that she was drawing and painting because, you know, that's how she was feeling at times. So in that sense, to say, oh, it's just blah, is probably being, you know, surface level ignorance on my part and on the part of all the critics back then who weren't really looking beyond just the
mass production
of those prints didn't help.
The reasoning behind the paintings as far as Walter Keane was concerned, because, you know, obviously that's a question he got asked, being the, you know, supposed creator, was, you know, well, when I was over in the war and there was all these kids and, you know, it really affected me to see these war-torn countries and you had all these, you know, sad kids. That's where I got the idea from. Okay, it does feel kind of like, I get it, but it's still kind of weird that 40-year-old man is painting little girls. I don't know.
Oh, now it definitely would look super weird. But back then, I don't think people thought in those terms because the internet wasn't invented.
Yeah, that's true. So, anywho, before rambling on forever about this, numbers, go.
I'm going to give it a 7. I liked it. I'd watch it again, but it's not like an all-time classic for me. It's definitely a weird I just wish Tim Burton would have put more Tim Burton into it.
Well, actually, you know, I was just thinking about that, too, and I feel like there are definite points in the movie where it does have that feel, like when she's kind of sort of losing it a little bit, and everywhere she looks, whether it's in the mirror or on her neighbor's face, like actual people are starting to have big eyes. I thought that was very a Burton-y effect.
It was, but they were in spurts. It didn't, like, I feel like Tim Burton's movies are really heavy-handed when it comes to his almost Pink Floyd the Wall art style, and I didn't feel a lot of it in this movie. I felt like there were a lot of parts where I was like, this feels like a anybody movie.
Yeah. Personally, I'm actually higher than that. I'm at a solid 8. And there's like I said, there's really not that much to not like about this movie. And when you pair up two of the best actors on the planet right now together, I mean, it's kind of hard to not enjoy this movie. Wrapping up, if there were three artists, musicians, whatever out there that you would want to see a biopic of, who would it be? Number three for me, and this is going to sound weird because they just made one, but I feel like if you're going to make a Jimi Hendrix biopic, you kind of have to get the rights to use the music. Making one without the music doesn't make sense in my brain.
That's 98% of why I didn't even waste my time with that movie.
Yeah. I feel like I will eventually, but I feel like how on earth did you get the rights to make the movie but not use the music? Like, what is that's blows
and
my mind.
It's a waste of that Andre 3000 guy because he looks pretty close to Hendrix.
Yeah.
Like, I think they got the look right, and to not get the music seems like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, is this like a made-for-sci-fi movie or something? Like, what's going on? My number three is Albrecht Dürer. He did a lot of wood carving or wood cuttings back
in the
1500s.
I was thinking of
specifically one that I love. It's definitely of the evil, dark side of religion, side of things. The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which I actually got to see at the Museum of Art downtown, which. The minute we started studying him in art history, I was like, oh, I love this guy's artwork. I mean, it's definitely where, because back then a lot of paintings were, you know, of families and they were commissioned by the royalty, and a lot of religious artwork was depicting, you know, the angels and the heavens and so on. And here's this guy painting demons and eating people and all this stuff, which is really interesting. I'm sure he probably wasn't widely celebrated back in the times of his work.
Yeah, I was actually scouring the internet trying to remember his name because I was going to pick him, but I couldn't find it, so I had to substitute others. But yeah, no, I completely agree. I just stumbled across his artwork one day on Google, and I was like, this is amazing. I should get that tattooed in my face.
Yeah.
But number two for me, and I went with all musicians only because every single artist I was going to pick have at least two or three already made, and without seeing them yet, it's kind of hard for me to go, they need to do a better one, you know? So I figure I'll go with musicians who I know don't have them. Second, Louis Armstrong.
Yeah, I'm kind of, now that you mentioned it, I'm surprised it's never been done.
Right? I mean, it's
it seems almost like you'd have to make one.
He's like one of the most famous jazz musicians ever.
Yeah, I'm feeling like you're going to see a Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day biopic before you'll see a Louis Armstrong one, which is like what?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to dismiss Billy Joe Armstrong's contribution to music, but it's not on the same level, I don't think.
No, I agree.
There's a level for it, it's just not that
that
high. My number two, actually, I don't know the guy's real name, which is stupid of me for not looking it up, but Dr. Seuss.
I feel like they just made one.
If they did, I'm unaware of it. I just feel like his books were like definitely of a certain style of childlike innocence, and they were definitely for kids, but the books, they definitely had a bizarre quality, and the art style was definitely a little out there.
Theodore Geisel.
Theodore Geisel, okay. I just wonder, I'm like, was he just this normal, everyday, happy, suburban guy who just happened to create some of the most influential children's books of the 20th century? Or was there some weird darkness going on there that caused him to create some of the weird, bizarre characters? And, I mean, plus you start digging into some of the content of his stories. And, like, for example, The Lorax, you know, when the movie came out, there was all these people going, it's environmental, blah, 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 Mask is a children's story. And it's like, that's interesting. Like, that's the sort of thing I'd like to know. Was there something underlying in his stories beyond just like, I want to entertain kids and make your childhood magical. Or was like, because it's been talked about a million times. They talked about it on Star Talk recently, that because of the social and political climate of the times, talking about social ills in most ways was frowned upon. And it was super easy to be labeled a communist and be banned from all sorts of things. So a lot of sci-fi writers would couch their politics in stories about aliens and robots as a means to talk about stuff like racism and, you know, distribution of wealth, for example.
Seems like late 2011, early 2012, there actually was some serious talks about it. I don't know if it ever came out or came to fruition. Oh. But the Dr. Seuss one was on the list. That's probably why I heard of it.
I want to see it, because especially knowing like the true meaning of the Lorax, like, he was a scary environmentalist.
Yeah. My first one might be a little odd that most people probably don't know of, but there was a rock soul musician, you know, back in the, I believe, the 60s, late 60s or whatever, Baby Huey. I forget his actual name. I was looking it up earlier today, but basically he put out one record and then died right after it came out. But I think that would be an interesting story to see his, you know, progression into the music world and, you know, growing up and finally making it happen just to die like before the record even came out.
That's a goddamn fantastic record too.
I love it. I love it. I stumbled upon it a few years ago when I heard John Legend and the Roots covering all those old protest songs on the album Wake Up. I started looking up some of the original artists, and he was one of them. So I looked up that song, which led me to downloading the album, which I've been kind of fascinated with the guy ever since, and I just think that'd be an amazing story to hear.
I know of a few people that did the same thing and are like, oh my God, how did this record slip by me? This thing's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Hard Times is one of the best songs like I never heard till I was like 37.
I know, right?
I was like, oh my God, this song is the best. How is this not on the radio every day? Okay. Yeah. All day long. That'd be a really wild movie. How did he die anyway?
I don't remember.
I mean, I know he was definitely not svelte. But
I mean, I'm not sure if it was, you know, high blood pressure or diabetes. I mean, he was a large guy, but he wasn't old. You know, he was in his 20s, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. Make that movie, goddammit. My number one is actually my favorite artist, and that's Hieronymus Bosch, who created the triptych painting, The Garden of Earthly Delights. Another piece of work during his time, I'm sure, was not particularly found to be acceptable, considering it's a interpretation of heaven, hell, and purgatory, and it's just got some really, really bizarre depictions of half man, half animal creatures, and just weird stuff going on. It's such an amazing piece of work. I would love to see it in person. I don't know where it's located, but if I ever get the time, the money, and the opportunity, I will definitely make a point to go see it like face to face. Because that, if there was such a thing as a bucket list on my mind at the moment, that would be one of them. It would be to go see that up close. And I'll say, I have not been a Metallica fan for a really, really, really long time, going on 25 years at least. But in the late 90s, they did a video for the song Until It Sleeps, which is actually not the worst song ever. But the video is inspired by the Garden of Earthly Delights, and it's hands down the best video they ever made. It's like, it makes the song far more enjoyable based on the video's content. So,
sorry, I was still looking up Baby Huey.
Well,
I was 26 when he died. Drug related heart attack.
Oh.
Boo.
Yeah, boo, exactly.
So, there you have it. That is the movie roast for this week. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find the show at The Comic Roast. We are also on the Facebook at facebook.com/thecomicroast or facebook.com/reviewandroast to kind of connect with our review website where we review movies, TV shows, comic books, regular books, streaming shows, pretty much anything and everything we can. We got some board games up there, so go. You can make an account. You can write your own reviews. You can comment on ours. You can rate everything on a scale of 1 to 10. It's a lot of fun. Please don't forget to check that out. And we'll see you next week.